Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 7 of Voices from the Dark with your host, Steve Kafari. That's me. Today I'm sitting on the canal, I guess it's called Maybachufer, in Neukölln, Berlin. I've got another installation of the artist series. So this is episode 7 of the podcast, installment number 6 of the artist series. And before we get on to speaking with the artist for today, just want to make a couple of announcements, as usual. I am looking for co-producers. So if you want to make podcasts, if you want to make them happen, if you want to be there and show up and get these podcast episodes produced and make everything happen, I want you to get in touch with me. This is your opportunity to create a podcast if you've ever wanted to, and basically to bring your ideas to the world. That is announcement number one. Something more specific is I would like personally, and my co-producers could come up with other ideas, but I really, for some reason, I want to do a politics series or a limited series on politics. I don't know why people tell me I should not do that, because too much of that out there already. But I want to do that. And of course, philosophy, something about how to actually have productive discussions and ruminate on different ideas and so on. That's another category I'd like to get into. And finally, something new that I thought of, which I've mentioned before in terms of a utopia podcast, but this one more specifically for writers. I would like to have fiction writers talk about the different themes that they use in their work, different techniques, basically anything to do with creating fiction or any other kind of writing, and sort of discuss and work through and really just enjoy talking about it. So those three topics, if you're interested, let me know. Or if you have any of your own ideas, that'd be great to hear. And let's do it. I'm open to everything. Not everything, but you know what I mean. Let's just get right into it. Episode number 7, 6th installment of the artist series. I have my guest today. I'll just let her introduce herself. Who are you?
Hi. I'm Federica, and my heart's name is Francis Flux. I picked this name when I was very active as a VJ. So I am a visual artist. I do video VJing. I am a performer. And I think I'm interested in all kind of time-related artworks, which means that anything that connect time as a medium, as a process, and have some kind of live setting.
Okay, and let's backtrack just a little bit. Where are you from? Where do you live? I guess that's all part of who you are.
Yeah, so. Sure. I'm Italian. I come from Italy, from north part of Italy, from Como Lake. So this little town called Lecco, lying down to the mountain, between the mountain and the lake. So pretty nice place, actually. And I do live in Berlin, and I think I choose Berlin long time ago as a home, and I was back after a few years being away, back to Italy, living in UK and so on.
In the UK, so?
Yeah, I was living in Manchester for a while as well. Uh-huh. And then I was back to Italy working in Venice, and then I decided Italy is not actually my country anymore, or I don't want to be there for a while, I would say. And I find home here in Berlin, and this is where I live and work.
Okay, and so what attracted you to come to Berlin specifically, or to Manchester? Like, yeah. What was the reason?
Well, I come here for a university exchange the very first time, so it was very random. Even though I think there's nothing really random in life, so I think it was a kind of gift of luck that happened to me at one point in my life, and Berlin, this city, really catch me wherever I was and bring it on my path. And this is the feeling I have with the city, that whenever I am lost, or not lost, but like wandering, this city catch me and bring me back to my path, to what I supposed to do, to, you know, okay, to evolve myself in a way.
And how long have you been in Berlin?
In total, it's 5 years now.
Okay. Yeah. And how long have you been outside of Italy?
Outside of Italy since 2007. So,
wow, so it's 11 years.
Yeah, 11 here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And let's talk about your art before we get into more about like the locations and stuff like that. You said that you like to work with things related to time. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, this is, you know, I like time because it's a concept, it's a medium, it's an experience, it's a lot of stuff at the same time. Most of it, I'm interested in seeing, in having a different experience of time, you know, like time can be very intimate, and time can be in some way, you know, absolute, because everyone has a watch or those kind of thing. But time can also expand or collapse, okay, for some kind of practice. And I'm interested in this kind of niche field where space and times are really two parameters that are not Cartesian anymore.
They're not Cartesian.
Cartesian, yeah, anymore in some way. So they are not like absolute, but they are really sensitive, and they're really like connected to the experience of each individual.
Hmm. Okay. I'll ask you in a minute what more specific, like projects you do with this idea. Maybe you can tell me more about like how you, what attracted you to time, or what makes you, I mean, you said why it's important and like how flexible it is, but can you say more about like how did you get to that point?
Yeah, I think I have to talk a little bit about why how I ended up being an artist.
Oh, yeah. Engage
with art in any way.
Okay.
which is still a very, very much personal decision, and for personal I mean political and subjectical in a sense. So my relation to creativity, to what is art for me, it's really spiritual in a way. And for spiritual, that doesn't, I mean, it's always a tricky word to use, but I really mean something that, some kind of experience that make you, your life more alive, you know, this sense of aliveness, or this sense of connectiveness with life and so on. And so I struggle a lot. I think a bit I'm still struggling, you know, because it's a kind of a uncertain path that you have to take. And it's very, very much transformational. Like, so you as a human being, as a person, change a lot along to what change around you, you know?
Okay.
And so, yeah, in some way, before with video and VJ, and then with performances, and now with sound artwork that I do, I understood that there's a way to access some kind of system of knowledge, I will say, some kind of, you know, organization of knowledge that lead you to a higher consciousness or to a kind of altered state of consciousness, without taking any psychoactive substances, right?
Psychedelics.
Yeah, we are not talking about psychedelic, but we are talking to induce or access through some practice this state of mind. And in this state of mind, time has a very much different quality. You know, it's something that it's fluid. It's something that does not has a beginning of a hand. Mm. You know, it's a different perception of it. And I'm interested in giving this experience to the people and sharing and holding spaces where these experiences are possible.
Okay, so what was the most successful in these terms that you just described? What was the most successful project or event that you were a part of, if there was a success, you know, by your measure of success, not by society?
Well, yeah, it's hard to say. I think I have a couple of projects in my mind. One is a collaboration that I did with a architecture collective. I used to work very often with architects, and especially in all the politics behind the public space. Mm. So how art and culture can activate a public space, and about how actually some artistic practice can promote the knowledge about urban commons and how people can really engage with this topic. Mm. And I remember that was this project. It was an itinerant project. The name is Da Mare a Mare actually is a quotation, from a song, in Italian it means from sea to sea.
Mm, okay.
And we were actually traveling, so the project is itinerant, and with a couple of friend artists and architects, and we were going city to city from Italy to north of Spain, creating installation works, basically challenging public space and challenging also the storytelling around public space.
Okay.
And that creates a huge amount of awareness around hospitality, what is hospitality and what is inclusion and what is actually can happen when you recognize that a space is common, a space is belong to everyone and everyone can contribute to the existence itself of the place. So that was a very nice project that in some way it's connected to time, because when you travel you have a different time, like you perceive a different chronology of events and so on.
What was the name of this itinerant project?
Da Mare a Mare.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. my short-term memory is garbage, but
and the project was developed by the collective that I'm also part of, and it's called Urban Slow. Yeah, and it's a collective based in Italy.
Okay, and so with this collective, you traveled around, doing this one specific project, Da Mare a Mare.
Exactly. Okay. And then I remember one of the first time I was actually using sound in my artworks, and was a performance I did, an audiovisual performance I did. The name of this work, it's The Journey.
The name is The Journey.
The Journey, oh, okay. Yeah. And I presented in this incredible building in Hasselt in Belgium, and it was like a former courthouse, completely abandoned. So there was still like this, you know, wooden desk where the people were processed and so on, and in the cellar, in the underground of
the
basement, sorry, of the building, we did a kind of underground festival. So there was a lot of artists and musicians and performers coming over, and I present this audiovisual, and I used to work with musician on my side, you know, like DJ or musician. So I was used to deal just with the visual VJing, real time VJing composition, which has to do with music as well, like with music composition at least. But it's another language, it's another storytelling. And then I decided to put the two things together. So I was doing the music and the video as well. And I remember that moment, something very magical happened, because as soon as I start doing the sound, and you know, like my DJ set, my remix are very much this kind of drone, super dark, experimental electronic music. It was like I was kind of access some kind of source, and I was transported in another place, and I was really like, I know it can sound like freaky, but I was really like connected to some kind of spirit, you know, of power. Okay. That throw the sound and throw my presence there. They were like engaging with the public, with the audience. And that moment was timeless. Like that moment was like 1 second or 3 years at the same time. You know, like was so powerful. And I remember like the feedback of the people, because anyway, it was the first time I was presenting the work, and they were super scared. And I was so happy about that reaction, because it was very honest, you know. Like, I remember that I was also super scared about what's going on there. I was shaking, you know. I was really, like, being there, but also, like, try to put my body, like, my like, materialistic body together, not to freak out. Mm. So I think with sound, this kind of experience can really happen.
It sounds wild. I mean, that's what I'm. That's one of the reasons I do this podcast, is to get stories like that, like you know, things that change, transformations and stuff like that. Yeah. But you mentioned challenging public spaces, and like challenging, what does it mean like to be a public space? That's one way of looking at challenges. Like we can challenge. As writers and artists, we can challenge the world, or challenge the public, and challenge ourselves. What was, and there's another way of using this word challenge. It's like, what's difficult? You know, it's like, if something is a challenge, it's difficult. Now, it sounds like this basement sort of experience was challenging. But was there something that was the most challenging that you've ever faced outside of this basement? So in another project, or
in terms of setting or environment, or in terms of
just like being an artist, like what was the most challenging project you ever tried to complete?
Well, I think being an artist itself is a lifelong challenging project.
Okay.
Especially when, like me, you want to work not so much with commercial galleries or this kind of thing. Like, I don't do so much commercial art or commercial embedded art. So most of the time I have to deal really with project writing, funding or grants or
funding.
So I think the challenge actually comes out of this point, that you need to live, you need to, you know, sustain yourself as an artist, but at the same time, what you do is nothing that people can put in their living room, or you know, or it's nothing. I mean, not just because I do performance or like kind of more immaterial artwork, and there's also a reason because of that. Maybe I tell you later, but I really feel like art, contemporary art, needs to fight for find a place where to research and where to, you know, go deeper in certain topic and certain process, and be free not to be commercial, you know.
So you feel that, well, that sounds pretty accurate from what, you know, we've talked about on the podcast so far and what I know, kind of just being human. Yeah, finding the financial means to do what you want is usually the biggest challenge for everybody. So what other stories, because you mentioned stories before, that you in the basement project, that you was kind of like a stories you were telling, like the visual, the story, the audio story, and it's like different languages. What kind of stories do you want to tell? You know, are they specifically, do they have characters? Like,
yeah.
What kind of stories?
Well, I mean, I think story comes out of pretty much anything, because yeah. it's some kind of property of our mind to made up story out of stuff, you know, like. So if you see like a comics, there's two images, there's no story behind, but your brain creates a story to link these two images. So I think that everything actually tell a story, but the difference is that I don't use a linear language, a linear storytelling. So you don't know where you get into the story, but you don't know which point is it, you know. So you don't know if it's the very beginning, if it's about to finish and you're gonna restart, you know. It's this kind of not linear composition that you have in VJing, you know, because as a medium there's no story or characters or there's no fiction really, even though there's stories behind, but these stories are more like a travel, you know, are more like
like a journey before
the
like
journey or the destination where you want to bring people with, you know, with you.
And that was the name of the basement project.
That, it was called that was Journeys. Just the name of my performance, actually.
Just your specific one.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so stories definitely can come from anywhere. I agree with that 100%. I guess then we can talk a little bit more about, you had mentioned wanting to talk about, like, you know, your journey, again, journey, you know, your journey as an artist. Like, what was the first artistic thing, in your opinion, that you did? Like, what was the first thing? I know a lot of people have, like, maybe when you're like 7 years old, you do some paintings. Or I remember my brother and I, we did these actually audio recordings on cassette tapes, and we would use the double cassette tape to kind of edit it and patch it together. And we would make these crazy, ridiculous stories. And in some way, you can call that art, even though there was just two stupid kids. It's like, what was the first time that you created art?
Yeah. Well, I have to tell you that I don't know if I was a very talented kid, you know.
Talent is,
I mean,
a lot to say about talent.
Yeah, I just remember that there's no other artist in my family for like three, maybe four generation, both sides. And so I think that anytime I wanted to be creative in a way when I was a kid, I didn't have the proper tools, or like there was no instrument in my place, or this kind of thing, you know. And then I remember that I was starting to paint with whatever I found in the kitchen, for instance, you know. I was my grandmother grew up me.
Raised you.
Yeah, she was raising me because my mom was working, so I spent a lot of time with her. And I had like free access to the kitchen, so I was, you know, taking coffee and taking tomato sauce and all those kind of stuff, and I was painting with that, or cooking, or like doing stuff with actually what you have around you, you know. And this is something that, you know, it stick on me actually after as well, because I really love to do art with not artistic material or you know, stuff like,
so stuff that's not usually considered to be a medium,
exactly,
an artistic,
exactly,
medium.
I really like to do that. But then I remember also at one point I was like, okay, mom, you know, like, I love to play an instrument, like, can I go to guitar class or something? And she was like, yeah, of course you can. And then I start my journey with music in some way. And so I was starting playing like at the age of, I don't know, 13, 14, I was starting to play the guitar. And I took few classes, but not too much actually, because I didn't like the guy. And also because it was so frustrating for me, like not be able to play the music as I wanted, you know. But still, I was so connected with music and with the possibility that you have when you play to really release emotion or state of emotion that you can with words and you can with action. You know, there's just like very subtle emotion that just music can make you release. So I remember that actually, like, that was my first artistic, I will say, episode or epiphany, because as soon as I understood that I will not be able to play the classical guitar as I wanted, I decided to interpret the lyric and the sound as I wanted, you know. And from that point to the point of writing was very, very, very quickly. So I was writing and freestyling a lot of songs while I was playing, and I realized that there was like something nice that I could work on me, you know, I could work with.
So you went from the kitchen to the guitar to composing music, and then what happened after that?
And then I studied in a scientific high school.
Scientific,
okay. Yeah. So a lot of maths and chemistry and physics and so on. And I remember that the only thing that I was very, very good in doing was writing. Like, I had this crazy aptitude of writing, like creative writing, not really like other stuff, but
like fiction.
Yeah, kind of fiction, exactly.
Stories.
Whenever stories, like short stories and this kind of thing. And that moment happened, that, you know, this kind of teacher that happened once in everyone's life, that is the teacher that really teaches something, you know? And it's not about content, or it's not about, you know, school topics, but it teaches you like something that is very much important for your life. And this guy, I still remember this man, it was so, it was subtle in his way of teaching, you know. It was not even raising his voice too loud. It was really like make people understand and listen to him. And I really developed this idea of listening, you know, like to be attentive and to care about all the subtle things happen around. And then from there, I went to the university and I studied. I actually tried out to study medicine for a while.
Oh, wow.
Yes. It was a crazy, crazy...
What happened there? Why did you decide, or why did you think of doing such a strong...
Well, I can just tell you that the first time I went into this this room where there was like a cadaver, and the doctor around me started to open it
like
up.
Like a human?
Like a human cadaver, of course. And all my colleagues, they were super excited. They were like, wow, finally we can see this and that. I was like freaking out, but not because I was scared, because it was still a person lying down there for me. It was not a cadaver. It was not like something that I can open up and have a look. It was like really still a person. And these on top of other stuff make me, and at the end of the first year, decided that was not my path at all. And I'm happy about that in the end, because like my experience with Western medicine, it's really, really... it's very different now, like growing up, being an adult, like making my own choice and having my own understanding about what healing is.
Healing.
I don't follow the Western medicine in my everyday life, in my life so much. And I had a couple of surgery, and it was shocking what they did to me. Like, honestly, the idea that they can just open you and fix whatever is broke inside you and close it and send you home, it's crazy for me. So I, thanks God I didn't become a doctor, because otherwise I will be so frustrated, you know. but after that, I remember there was a big crisis in my life, you know, because
crisis,
yeah, because, you know, I didn't know what to do then, you know, because I thought like to become a doctor was my kind of call in some way, and then I had to change everything. But in this, you know, crisis moment, as very often happens in life, mm-hmm. you really get to the core of who you are and what you want, and you have at least the occasion to ask yourself, okay, what, you know? And I decide, okay, I have a huge transportation and passion for art. Let's follow this in a very intuitive way, you know? Like, so I decided to study art, but not in an academy, because I thought I was not talented. And I thought, like, no, it's not something that I like to do, but I like to understand, you know? So I studied Kunstwissenschaften, so art science.
Art science. That's not art history, though.
It's art history and critics and okay. so on, yeah. Okay. But not so much from art historian point of view, but it's more like philosophy and aesthetics and all
so
the stuff.
So you said that in German, art science, but where did you... this was in Italy that you did this?
It was in Milan, and the last year I was in Berlin here.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I finished my university year.
Okay. Yeah, keep going. Tell me more. So basically, you started this, let's say, art science. I don't know what the English translation of that is, but the art science, you started that in Italy, and then your last year was in Berlin.
Yes.
And so then that was five years ago?
That was end of 2008.
Ah, right, because you've been here for...
From 2007, eight, I was here, and then I came back to Italy to take the degree, and then I moved to Venice at that point because I started working as a art curator. I wrote a project, and I found a gallery that liked the project, and I was doing like monthly one-day exhibition.
One-day exhibition.
Yeah, so I had this format. I wrote this kind of format in the end. It was one-day exhibition where all the work installed, they were changing during the 24 hours. So it was a kind of, you know, keep on going on exhibition where people are, the artists invited, they were like either making up the artwork as a process or dismantle, destroy them and so on. Wow. And I was really interested in this kind of active participation, you know, and all this kind of feeling that the artwork itself is not the final output of nothing. It's just like one picture in a process, you know, that the heart decide to share. But there's so much behind, and the production of this exhibition, it was great because it was like one month of really interpersonal work where I was basically living with the artists that I invite, like really very very much close work, because this is the way I work as a curator. Like I really like to see you as an artist, the way you live, the way you see society, the way you share your everyday life with others, you know. Of course, I'm interested also in your artwork, but I'm more interested in the human being behind, you know.
Yeah.
So it was funny because I made a lot of friends also in this way, and in Venice is such a small and international village, you know. It's kind of nice.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So one long month of preparation, then one day exhibition, you know, 24 hours.
So 1 month of preparation for one day.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And that was in Venice. Okay. So I really think that's an amazing story so far. And let's take a break. We're on the river or the canal or whatever. Sort of in a strange position here. Probably should stand up and walk around a little bit. It's like no chairs, it's a beautiful scenery, and lots of swans swimming around, and I think that's the perfect time to take a break. So we will catch up with Federica with her story, maybe continuing straight from Venice after the break. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. Welcome back. We are back from the break. It's still a beautiful day. The swans, however, the swans are gone. I don't know, maybe they went to take their own break. So we were talking about Federica's time in Venice, and I'm going to let her continue. Where were we exactly?
I think I was just telling about this exhibition project, no?
Yeah.
But I don't have so much to say anymore about the project, but I want to say something about Venice. Okay. I don't know if you've been there for some...
I've been there once, yeah.
So I've been living there for about 1 year. And it's such a crazy city. It's incredible because, first of all, it's very small. Mm. So it's a kind of village kind of thing. And the mentality sometimes can be also village mentality. But at the same time, it's super international. So it's like a window on the whole world. You know, all the people from all over the countries comes to pass by to Venice. So it's this kind of strange mix. And I remember that, you know, about if you want to see like where the center of contemporary art are in Italy, you definitely have to pick Venice, Milan, and Turin, right? Okay. And I remember that I was living this dichotomatic.
Dichotomatic.
Yeah.
Dichotomy.
Exactly. Yeah. Between being in a very much contemporary art environment and living like my everyday life like it was like the 18th century, because you know you have to go everything by walk, you have to go of course you have this boat, but it's most of the time you walk, you just walk and space can become super long space, like I mean the city itself can expand, can become so large in a second, you know. And that was very funny, because also like the way it made the city is made, you know, this, you have this building and this very small street going inside like a labyrinth, so it's really psychological in some way, the city, you know, you're lost inside, you don't have direction because it's all kind of circular, like the number of the street that don't follow any kind of logical rhythm or so on. So it's strange. It's a very strange city, Venice. I like it. It was winter when I moved there, so there was less tourists and so on. But it definitely it's not a city where I will live. You know, it's too much. Sinking. I had this feeling that you sink really much down with the city itself.
They do say that it is sinking, isn't it?
It is sinking, yeah. I mean, maybe like 1 milliliter per year, but yeah, of course.
So what was your next step as an artist after, or, you know, your next step in Venice or your next step after Venice?
So after that, I moved. I decided, you know, I wanted to live a little bit in the UK. So I moved to Manchester, and I had a very much crazy time there, but beautiful, you know. Like Manchester is this really post-industrial city, ugly city, let's say, you know, because it's not really nice, I have to say. But it was way cheaper than London, of course, and at that time was something that I was important for me to find like a cheap room to rent and like to be able to have a lot of time to dedicate to my art.
Yep.
And so I just moved there. No, actually I went there for a holiday and I met a bunch of very interesting people. Like I met so much artists there and photographer and so on, and they were really engaging me in their project, and I was like, okay, let's move there, you know. Like I always, in some way, what drives me are the people, you know. This is the way also I've been back to Berlin after all these years, because I really need to have people, real people around me, you know. And and that time Manchester was the place to be for me. So I ended up in this kind of squatted projects run by friends, and I had a lot of fun. I had also a lot of, there was a lot of space for counterculture to express and to self-organize stuff and so on, which is something that always interesting me in some way, you know, the relationship between institutionalized art and what comes out from bottom up, you know, yeah. Community of people or project. So, yeah, it was funny until the moment where I was skipping food.
You were what?
So we had this project. I was actually supporting a friend of me, and they squatted a place, and they were organizing like a social dinner every night for people that had not so much food, so they were able to come and have a warm food.
Was it just artists or...?
There were mainly artists, a lot of philosophers, and it was a very social-oriented project. It was not just giving a place to live for people that didn't have a place to live or this kind of thing. It was not really punk squatted. Mm. It was more like, okay, we reintroduce a space that is empty to the social fabric, and we do organize workshop and activities for creating a kind of more inclusive environment in the neighbor. So it's very much local activities going on there. And so one night we were skipping, which means, you know, I was going with friends to take the food that has been trashed from the supermarket.
And oh, you call it skipping?
They call it skipping, yeah.
Okay.
And it's incredible how much good stuff it's been trashed every day, you know. Yeah. And so we were collecting this food and coming back to our place and cooking and making food for homeless or for people that really cannot afford a meal. Mm. And and while doing that, I broke my knee. Yeah. This story I never told to my parents. I just tell them I broke my knee.
don't show them this podcast.
So I broke my knee, and that's the reason I had to come back to Italy for a while.
Oh, okay.
Because I had to have a surgery and so on. Yeah.
Okay. And that was Manchester.
Yeah, that was Manchester.
So you broke your knee in Manchester.
Yeah.
It's like that's a song.
It was
right
crazy.
There.
Can I tell you a little story?
Of course.
So I was in Manchester, like this friend of me was bringing me to the hospital, and I couldn't move my knee, like it was completely blocked. And the doctor say, okay, look, we cannot do any exam to you. And I was like, please, I need a MRI, you know, like I need an X-ray, an MRI, something. I need to see what's wrong. And they were like, no, you rather go for some codeine for a couple of weeks.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, my God, these guys are crazy. Like, I will be addicted after 2 weeks of codeine, you know. Yeah. So I didn't take that codeine, but some flatmate of me was really happy about that. And I decided, okay, mom and dad, I have to come back to Italy because I need a proper surgery.
Mm. Mm. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So that was like... English medicine or UK,
yeah.
And they just wanted to give you drugs.
Yeah, cool. Okay. It was really surprising. Like even at the supermarket, you will find like the full blaster of pills. Like I don't know, 50 pills for 50 cents or something like that. You know,
codeine? No,
not codeine, but like anti-pain killers or this kind of thing. It was super cheap. You know, like the way the people really had so much. For any kind of pain, you know? Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it seems like that's the way it is here, too. I mean, they have tons of painkillers. I try not to take them myself, but sometimes you do need them. But these are low-level painkillers. These are not codeine. Codeine is, yeah, could be powerful.
Yeah, but you know, like the relationship we have in the Western society with pain is very peculiar because we don't accept pain. You know, we don't accept pain, we don't accept illness, we don't accept a lot of stuff that are part of the healing sometimes process itself. So whenever pain comes as a message with it, it wants to say something that you have to listen. You know, when you have pain in some part of your body, sometimes you have to understand what this part is connected with, because sometimes it's not about treating this part, but really find a connection with your organs or whatever, you know. And this is the Western medicine didn't really offer you as a methodology in some way, but it's really important to listen to pain and to be okay with feeling pain, you know, because there's a lot of stuff to learn out of it.
Well, pain, from what I understand, is your body communicating to you something that's going wrong. So when you have, for example, a pain in your knee, your body is telling you, hey, pay attention to this, you know?
Sure. But it's pretty much also like the beginning of the healing process, because when you feel pain, it means that the illness, it's been superficialized, you know? From very deep and unconscious level, it's been on the somatic level. Mm. So whenever we have pain in our knee, it's not just because the knee doesn't work. Mm. There's a lot of other connection that you can do with the knee and how you relate to the knee all your life and what does mean the knee for you and so on. Mm. For instance, knee, it connected with the rigidity.
Rigidity,
you know, whenever you're too much rigid towards yourself, your decision, your commitment and so on, you can suffer out of it, you know. And of course, then something is broken and okay, it's broken. Yeah. But, you know, the way we deal with pain and especially chronic pain, it's very peculiar. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to talk too much about my pain, but I do have chronic pain in my shoulders and my neck. And yeah, I try not to take those pills. I try not to take whatever ibuprofen and things like that. So I do. I'm looking at, you know, yoga, and I run occasionally. So I do feel that these are sort of like therapies for that. So you mentioned earlier that you were thinking about going into medicine. So I feel like maybe. Is there a healing aspect to your art, maybe, that you think?
Yeah. In some way, I think. Because I even when I was working as a curator, you know, I was dealing with the term cura, you know, which in Italian means healing, you know. And I was thinking, how this comes in this moment of my life after quit medicine and so on. So yeah, I think healing is anyway a path for me, but not in a way that I want to heal the other people, but in a way that I'm discovering the tools and the ability that everyone has to heal ourselves, you know. And this is very important, because healing can be applied to illness, can be applied to discomfort, but it can also be applied to life in general, you know, to this subtle feeling that make us upset about life in general and how we can actually find meaning in what we are doing. So this is also healing for me, you know.
So art is healing in some way.
In some way, yes. I'm always very careful to say that, because, I mean, I believe there's a tradition, like art tradition, that see healing as a medium. You know, I'm talking about the healing tradition of South America and shamanistic practice and so on. That it's a form of art.
It's a form of art.
Yes.
Can you just say more about that?
Excuse me?
Could you say more about that? Like what kind of... So you say South America, like what kind of art, or what kind of... Do you mean that like art is healing, or is it the healing arts? What do you mean by that?
Well, this is... I think it's both thing. I do believe that art is healing, that in a way that you allow heart to heal yourself, you know, your heart allowed to discover creativity inside of you. And I think creativity doesn't belong to artists, strictly to artists. I think every one of us has a source of creativity, and access to this these sources is healing.
So access to creativity, or the creative kind of, you know, access to the creative sort of center of life is healing, maybe?
Absolutely. I mean, accept that creativity is what define life more powerfully, really. Like, if you, I make a shift, I go into another realm that is the scientific realm. Like, if you talk with a scientist, a biologist or whatever, like, they will say to you that life is defined by the creativity of adaptation.
Yeah, so like, the better we are at reproducing.
So you have to imagine that, you know, biological life comes out thousands of years of adaptation of these, you know, first microcells and then mushrooms and then blah, blah, blah. And then
so evolution.
So the biological evolution is made of creativity, of adaptation. And this, I think, is something that really stick also to human life, to human being. Because, you know, like, it's hard to say, it's hard to see some way also for me, but sometimes I imagine that, you know, like, we were, that, you know, like, the picture they found in the cave 2,500 years ago, you know? So it means that as soon as the man, the human species on Earth discovered the fire, discovered a way to settle in some place, they also discovered heart, because they start painting, they start like doing this kind of you know, story on the walls and so on, which is a very important passage for me, because I really believe that creativity and expression and this kind of things are really inside everyone. And sometimes it's maybe a mission of the artist to remember the other people about that, you know?
To remind people.
To remind that.
Oh, okay. Now, yeah.
You know,
I like
that it's not totally about be talented, or it's not about being pretty much inside a certain field of topic that makes you an artist, but it is actually trust your creativity and trust the ability of create your reality. Not just object, not create output, but create your own reality, you know?
Yeah, definitely. So I usually ask in these episodes, these installments of the artist series, I usually ask what kind of advice could you give to non-artists, so-called non-artists. But I feel like that right there is advice. I think you what you're saying, and I mean, you said it quite clearly, is that, you know, the benefits of creativity and the benefits of art and the benefits of just these creative impulses, they're not exclusively for artists, they're for everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So that, to me, is a huge piece of advice.
It's not just an advice, it's really an invitation, you know, for the people who doesn't sing, to sing, for the people who doesn't draw, to draw, for the people who doesn't paint, to paint, to dance, to shout, you know, because really all this discipline, music and all kind of art were very close to human history for such a long time, and then at one point we made up, you know, an industry out of it, just recent time, but before that it was like the church managing all the art production, and so, I mean, the human history that we know, you know, but especially in this time where creativity is very much connected with the creative industry, industry, I feel
capitalism,
it's really a moment where we have all to imagine and all to take a moment to reflect on of the fact that we can all be creative, you know, and not in the sense, oh wow, we can all be freaky and colored. No, like, find your own sources, you know, and the constant research for sorcery, it's important for me.
Sorcery,
yeah.
You mean like witchcraft?
A little bit, maybe.
I was saying in the break, during the break, how I like this topic of witchcraft and occult.
Yeah,
you know,
maybe a little bit. I mean, accept also and welcome magic in your life. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Totally. Yeah, I think that's great advice. Or
especially because, sorry if I interrupt
no, no,
you.
No.
Especially because in the, you know, in the Western society, we completely destroy, dismantle all the tradition and the philosophy about this. You know, that's why we are a kind of this kind of turn into South American tradition. We are really looking and learning and understanding a lot about life, looking at their tradition, that in some way they are still eradicated, and because they've been isolated, so they've been preserved, you know. But here, there were also a lot of shamanic tradition, let's say.
You mean in Europe?
In Europe, let's say, and a lot of knowledge about plants and about how to use natural officinal in your kitchen, in your daily needs. But we lose all of them very quickly, quickly, in three, four generation.
Three or
more.
Four, maybe more.
Maybe more, definitely.
Three or four is quite,
definitely
quite
more,
recent,
yeah.
No, I think that's great, and I think that this goes to, this says something about, you know, politics, government. This is, you know, sort of unlimited way of thinking. Like, if you just think about what humans are capable of and like what they actually do, you know, it's like where even now, this might sound a little rude, but you know, even the worst among us, the like least intelligent humans, can still memorize, you know, 1,000 different herbs or whatever,
of course,
that may actually kind of create have a benefit to society. And this is medicine, you know.
Absolutely.
All this knowledge. So I guess we can go towards that more capitalistic edge and say, as an artist, like, how do you, and we talked, you talked a little bit about it, you know, how do you kind of finance your work? How do, like, what's your day-to-day thing that you do, and like, or what have you done, like, to get the funding? You mentioned funding, and I know that most artists and most writers, you know, they have a day job. You know, this is the stereotypical, you know, thing. You know, it's like, what do you do for a living? It's like, oh, I work in a bar, but I'm an artist or I'm a writer. You know, so like, what do you do? Like, how do you get by? How do you finance your work?
You know about that. Is a very uncomfortable question to ask, right?
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. I mean, but the fact is that it's a super important question. And I also think that it's one of those questions that helps everybody, not just artists. You know, it helps everybody to realize that, you know, there's not this, there's no ideal way of supporting yourself in this, you know, for lack of a better word, this capitalistic society, you know.
Definitely.
Where you need to make money.
Definitely.
You know, but there's many ways to make money. There's many ways to support yourself. You mentioned a lot of things, but I guess what's the question is like, what do you, like, how do you make it work? How do you produce art without starving? You know, because there's that whole idea of
starving
artists.
Sure. Well, I have to say that I did lot of different kind of jobs in my life, you know, all kind of thing, like really, like working in cafe, restaurant, cleaning toilets, whatever comes to my way, I did it because I had this kind of side job that was my, you know, artistic process and research that was kind of nurturing my life. But most recently, I have to say that now I'm a little bit, you know, I also been working for a long time, like a few, at least 5 years as a creative director. Which means that I wanted to put together artists and the creative industry in a way that was sustainable for the artists, towards the artists, and respectful towards the artists, which never really happened in the industry. Especially, I was doing a project between art and fashion. And the fashion industry is sick, you know. It's really one of the worst, I guess, in terms of industry, and especially when it happened in Milan. So I work there.
Well, it's like a fashion capital, right?
It's a fashion capital, and it's really like the engine, I think, that move like the one of the energy that move the economy of the North Italy and Milan specifically, but also has a lot of besides, right? So the goal of my project, I wrote in life a lot of collaboration projects. So I really like to establish partnership with different kind of people from different field that have a common vision of view, and I like to take care of this view and make it happen and produce it. And at that time, for instance, when I had this 2 years project with an artist from Israel, from Tel Aviv, and two designers from Milan. Mm-hmm. We did together a collection, and we were presenting this collection during the Fashion Week. And in this way, of course, it's a way to make a little bit of money, of course. But in the end, like, I don't know. I have to say that I was also very upset. In the end, like, okay, let's finish about this. This project went very good. Like, I was very, very much happy about the output and so on. It didn't bring so much money, but anyway, it was worth to make it, you know.
But what was it called?
The collection we created was called Emerging from the White, and was inspired to this painting series of the artist Ted Barr. And it was great because I had the possibility to really orchestrate a runaway that was not a runaway. So we had model, we had performer. I made a specific performance. I direct a performance for this occasion. There was a sound artist that I invited was making a track for it. So it was a kind of crazy, immersive environment where this was like presented the collection. And I like this multimedia kind of connection, you know. So it was very cool, but after that I decided kind of honestly that I don't want to serve this kind of neoliberalist economical system anymore, and I explain you better. I've been busy so much time in my life to kind of self-branding myself, you know, to kind of be able to branding myself, what I'm doing, and to offer it as a service, you know. And even though I was very much oriented towards like a sustainable system that will include artists in the production, I was not really never happy enough about the output and so on. So at one point I kind of finished to do that stuff. I launched it, so many projects, you know, like I had a project about food that was about fresh handmade pasta, and I did workshop in Berlin, in Amsterdam and so on. And the idea was really like to educate back again the people that joined to learn how easy is to produce pasta with your, you know, with your own hands and not go buy the industrial food. Yeah. And beside that, there was a way to share knowledge and share tradition of and making pasta and so on. And then I had another fashion project that I started back two years ago, but now I feel like, you know what, like, I want to just do my little insignificant artworks, you know, and I don't want to brand anything I'm doing anymore. Okay. Because I feel like that was a way that I developed to kind of survive in this economical system, and I really, like, you know, a way to still be busy with things that I'm very interested with, but also create products that are possible to sell.
Yeah.
But now I feel like this was exhausting. Like, this was really overwhelming for me because in the end I try to adapt myself to the economical circumstances, but I didn't find, you know, a way to be okay with myself.
Okay.
So now I'm more like I like 2 years until two, no, 1 year ago, I was working in a cafe. I was running a cafe, you know, it was a kind of community cafe, like a eco-sustainable cafe. Of course, there's a nice, it was a very nice place, but I was working in the cafe, opening the door, closing the door, finish, you know. And that was also useful for me in that moment because, you know, I needed to have some kind of stability, which means like, okay, at the end of the month, you have some money coming into your bank account. And when you finish, when you close the door of the cafe or whatever, it's finished, you know, and you can go home and really do whatever you want. Mm. Whatever, well, with all these projects that I'm in, it's, I'm finished. Like, it's, you keep on working and keep on working and you keep on working and there's no really rest. Mm. So I think I need, until now at least, I needed to jump in a lot of different stuff. And I always try to create value out of what I got, you know, either the relationship that I have with people or the value of the project or the you know, the possibility, the latent possibility I see in something.
That's a lot of stuff to process. I keep sticking on the making of the pasta. I think that making pasta and teaching people how to make their own pasta is quite admirable, even if it is a service that you're trying to sell. I mean, I still think there's value in that, and I think that it's, you know, still something that's positive. But I totally get what you're saying about, you know, trying to, you know, accommodate this system, this, you know, again, for lack of a better word, this capitalistic system, where we're trying to, like, always make money. But I think that that's, I mean, I don't want to just say that's the way it is, but that's the way it is. And I think that everything that we do, you know, towards, you know, supporting ourselves as, like, organisms, you know, meaning, you know, buying food and making food, that's really where, you know, that's the goal.
Definitely.
For everybody, but I think that there, for artists, there is always that something extra that you want to accomplish.
Sure.
And it makes it feel cheap when it's something that you have to sell. Hmm. Right?
Yeah, but it's also about the time that you dedicate to make the things working, you know, like, for instance, this example of the fresh pasta, it was called Pasta Estrema, the workshop. And it was extreme in Italian because I developed some kind of recipe. So it was not just the classical recipe, there was the vegan, the gluten-free, and so on. And it was so fun. It was just fun. Having fun with people that were, like, beautifully joined the workshop and, like, bringing their own recipes sometimes, their own wish, or they want, you know, shape that what they want to make and so on. So it was very nice. And we had this common dinner after the end of the workshop all the time. So we went drunk all the time. And then it was the most interesting part, most probably. No, I'm joking, but... So the thing was working, you know, people like it, the format was nice and so on. But in order to make it happen in a sustainable way where you also earn money out of it and you have a like, kind of, you know, schedule activities, then it's really branding. You know, it's really branding, it's really using social media in a certain way, it's really usually using contact in a certain way. And I always feel like, okay, this is not my stuff, you know? Yeah. And sometimes I met people, friends that are like taking care of this part and I'm very happy. But whenever, generally I deal every kind of aspect of my project, you know, because in the end this is reality, you know, you're the maker, you're the artist, the maker, the you know, you promote the thing, you do everything by yourself. And then became a little less interesting for me, you know, because yeah, okay, I know that this can work, I'm happy, but I don't want to, you know, push people and things to make it happen regularly so I can pay my bill, you know?
And like you said, it's exhausting. I know from doing this podcast and many other things that trying to do everything yourself, even if you do have partners, it gets exhausting.
Yeah.
So I guess to end the podcast, which has been amazing. I really want to thank you for being
you.
Here. And to end the podcast, maybe you want to give a couple of shout outs to what you're doing now or any current projects or not.
Well, I have to say that I'm ready to go back to school. After 10 years after my graduation, my degree, I will go back to study. I'm about to start a master in sound studies that I'm super excited with. So it's going to be 3 years master, and I will be really focused on sound and the politics behind sound and how to create a new kind of auditory for sound practice. And I'm very happy about this, that is happening in this moment of my life as well. I really need to dedicate most of the time I have to research and really go deeper in certain things that, you know, like always floating between what you do, what you have to do, what you should do. Like, time is anyway 24 hours per day, you know. So now I feel like I'm gonna frame these 3 years in a proper amount of time to go deeper in certain things, and I'm very happy about that.
Okay, great. So we've come full circle talking about time, and I guess that's the episode. I really hope that we, you know, on the podcast, you maybe, you know, we'll come back or something, or maybe co-host, or who knows? There's so many possibilities. I really enjoyed this conversation. I mean, it's just, you know, a lot to think about. So,
thank you.
And I think that the audience, you know, will also feel the same. So, really,
very
thanks,
happy to
thanks
be
again.
Here.
Okay. Ciao.
Ciao.